Tem que All right, welcome folks who are calling in. We might be expecting a couple more folks, so if you can just hold on, we'll get started in a few minutes. All right, welcome everyone. This is the Demand Management Working Group meeting, and I am stepping forward with the credit building into every SSO leader. And before we kind of go through our regular prep stuff for the meeting, let's do a round of introductions for the folks who are calling in. So we're off with Justin.
Yeah, Justin Jensen, Deputy Director of Public Works Water Resources.
Michael Warren with the Groundwater Commission.
Bill Moore, Grower.
Steve Grunewald, Grower.
Al Payne, Groundwater Commission.
Brendan Flynn, Grower.
Ian Turnbull, Bay Area. Todd Ingram, Commission.
So, for participation, again, we have the speakers and mics in the center, and some folks are only calling in. It'd be great if folks, as much as possible, try to one voice at a time, and if you can state your name, that will help folks who are listening in to follow along. And for today's meeting, I'll go into the agenda, things like that. And this is the consensus building process. We don't need to hit full-on consensus on everything, but certainly the more that this group is able to find areas of agreement and identify where you are, where there's still things to be worked out. But that's the important part. We want to make sure that we're capturing that those range of perspectives. You should know our recap from last meeting on August 6th. And so we have the first part, we had a quick update on that framework technical report from LIDAR, so Eddie from LIDAR LLC. And based off of the input that you provided, they revised it again. And so it's pretty much ready to kind of go. They're handing it off to all of us to use it as a kind of a living document. So still opportunities to add and utilize it, but it's pretty much wrapped up the bow from the technical consulting side. Then we spent a good amount of time delving into some of the elements of the draft demand management program proposed ideas. And so all of that feedback really went into several documents that we're going to pull up today. So kind of identifying overarching issues. So we updated a bit of the triggers, mechanisms, management actions documents. So added some notes there to kind of get it all to one spot. Similarly with definitions of terms. And then also the ad hoc had met last week to kind of like review some of like the the top issues to inform the approach for today. We do have a couple of updates also that happened since the last meeting. Justin, do you want to go over particularly the status of the external legal review and the reporting?
Yeah, I don't have anything back from a specific date yet from legal. I did also send them the definition sheet for to add to their review process. I expected probably in the month range, which means be it the next month, is likely before I hear anything. And that's just depending on how what complications they may or may not come up with. Update on recharge and in lieu feasibility study.
That one was away from New York.
That one that was given. DW Corning and a report email I received last Friday afternoon. I received an email from DWR regarding the Corning subbasin, particularly, I'll call it requesting information regarding what the GSA is doing to prevent undesirable results when water levels indicate breaching of MTs and likely undesirable results during this next water year. So they want a response from us to say, how are you going to prevent this and what are you doing? So that was the requested information.
Who made that request? I'm sorry.
Department of Water Resources.
DWR at the state level.
At the state level. I will be bringing this forward to the commission and to the board for correction on anything that we want to respond with or how.
What do they want? It's not already in the plan.
Specifics about how you're going to address the potential undesirable results and the exceedances of MTs.
Yeah, I mean, the demand management. They've already got it. The plan that a demand management, or not demand management, well mitigation is due by a certain date. I mean, they've got the information.
Yeah, I think maybe they want an update on where we are. It doesn't actually say. Well, so that's going to have to be interpreted. But obviously, that's some sort of a push from DWR to be more specific about how we're addressing issues. We sent out public fact sheet and survey and had a fairly reasonable response. Do you know about the numbers?
The last I checked, were almost at 100 responses, which is really good compared to some of our past surveys. A very large number are coming in from domestic well owners, and so the more it would be great to get some more from farmers. So if folks want to spread the word about it, it's a really, really fast. We crafted it to be 5 minutes, so the more that folks can have raise awareness to share their perspectives, and I think it will be really, really informative. Thus far, some of the trends that we're seeing is they don't want these. They would like to. So as can be expected. And that in general, I think it was about two-thirds for when they were forced with the trade-off of either have like a uniform fee across or simpler but wider spread, that they preferred a more tailored approach to be determined what that even looks like, but in concept, that's generally what we are seeing. So in general, support for this concept of, manage where the issues are, so kind of the concept of management zones, and also however the fee structure is, tailoring it, so not this one flat fee across everything. So that's thus far what we're seeing. Again, it would be great to get more perspectives from farmers.
How did that survey link go out? I mean, I followed it, I think, off of one of our emails and filled it out. But in terms, I'm just thinking across like the grower base that I work with, I haven't talked to anybody that's mentioned it.
It was a front page in the newspaper yesterday.
Yeah, okay, but an email link that actually, aside from having to copy all of that.
Yeah, there's an email link.
And how did that go out?
It was sent by two different databases. One is, of course, our interested parties list, but the other one is also a larger email database that is owned by one of our local representatives at a state level.
How about the Kelsey Ag
Commission? 30,000 or so emails.
Okay. So that would probably cover most of the growers then.
I would think.
Okay. I'm just thinking, like, if you could harvest those emails off of the county ag commissioner's website, or if we're working with collaboratively with Tom, he probably will get you a list. And
yeah, I'd actually appear with him.
If you're really looking for rural response, you need to make sure it's getting in front of them.
We're also working with CWIC to help us get the word out, too, which would be very helpful because anybody irrigating, they should have their contact info.
Okay.
So I have a question for you, Justin.
Yeah.
On the third item, how are you going to coordinate with the Glenn County GSA regarding response?
Well, Lisa and I already had our initial meeting and discussed it.
That.
Yeah, and discussed it briefly. But we're going to have to have, it's going to have to be presented to at the commission and the CSAP level and discussions about how we want to respond along to Zoom from that point.
They sent her the same email.
Yeah, she actually is the contact point. I only get CC'd.
Yeah, coordination is important.
Agreed. Yeah.
More to come on that. All right. We're chugging along. That's through this process. That's the take-home message from that. I've seen that one before. Really fast on the agenda, two major items, but the first one's going to be pretty quick. You received the draft issues overview memo, so that had like a 6-page document and a 2-page version. And so you have a quick handout, so want to go over that, but then we really want to make sure that we're reserving space to build into some of the specifics, understanding the polygon approach that definitely came up as something the groups in concept generally support, but devil's in the details. And so I want to make sure that we're delving into that. And we, based off of the conversations, we're hearing certain scenarios that I think were very helpful in understanding the different polygon approaches. So we're going to pull up some of the specific scenarios that you all have raised to better explore that. So those are going to be the two major items. And then next steps is kind of thinking through, you know, we're kind of getting down to that final last 3 to 4 months for developing the demand management program. So we want to be thinking through making sure that we're making appropriate progress. Don't want to be pushing folks where they also want to make sure that we're being productive. We're not spending that far ahead. Any questions before we delve into the issues memo? So folks have gotten the issue memo. Just want to double check that folks have at least seen it, so it's not completely unfamiliar. And so just for context, as part of the facilitation support services that DWR is providing, one of the things that we're tasked, CBI is tasked with the deliverable, is to come up with two memos kind of giving an overview of what this group has been discussing. And so this is going to be the first one that's meant to be a midpoint in the process. And then the second one will be towards the end, kind of like bringing it all together. So this is the first one, and I'll just skip through that dissolve process. The first main part of this is to make sure that we're capturing the bucket of issues, the category of issues that this group has raised. And so we have ones related to the technical piece. So again, polygon approach is where we're going to delve in again into today. Related to that, also the trigger mechanisms, we discussed that. Data and technical items, so questions about the calculations, you know, we'll talk about that today as well, which will incorporate there was a question about the 10-year rolling average into the sustainability yield calculation that was brought up last time. Model assumptions have been a consistent theme. implementation timeline. There's some things that seem too fast and things are too slow. So again, issue has come up a couple times. Credits and incentives. This is a hybrid approach to the program. So we want to make sure that we're creating a structure for that. And through all of this, wanting the flexibility for the group. So those are the overarching categories, issues, and topics. And hopefully I'll be going over kind of areas of where there's emerging support, areas where there's some support or at least acknowledgement, but there's still some concerns, but they seem to be ones that can be worked out. And then areas where there's still so much to discuss. And so hopefully you will be seeing where all of those will fall within these buckets. And then there's one. There we go. It's another one. Economic impacts, acknowledging like this is very important to understand. Both having some sort of economic analysis and understanding the secondary impacts, and then the regulatory piece. So again, these were frequent themes that have come up. I wanted to create also just acknowledge like why this is very difficult is that there are just several trade-offs at play. And so just again, trying to make sure that we're progressing while also making informed decisions. There are these various trade-offs and thinking through what does the model, what can you calculate that you're comfortable with, that you feel like has a decent level of certainty versus also there's the challenge where like, that's not what I'm experiencing on my property or in my area. And then simplicity versus tailored. We kind of touched upon that when I was talking about the survey, though. Lots of trade-offs at play, and certainly depending on what topic you're thinking about, you could be on either side of these. So just want to acknowledge like why this, you're trying to find the balance between all of these trade-offs. All right, before I go into the areas of emerging support, do folks have any questions or things that they want to, I'm going to keep on moving us forward so that way we can get into the polygon approach. So lots of things actually for areas of support, particularly at the principle or concept level for this group, I'll just pull out some of just you know, flexibility, you want local control versus having the state coming in, similarly individual choice for flexibility, trying to find what is fair or across all groundwater uses, even though that the definition of fair differs depending on the person. You do want to minimize costs and fees. Leveraging the programs and partnerships that came up previously of just that let's keep also costs low, let's leverage existing things like outreach and engagement. So those programs, and of course let's make sure that we're compliant with SIGMA. Elements, the hybrid approach, so incentives before using restriction, having opportunities to review and flexibility to modify. So one side of all is kind of related to that, rewarding folks who are being good stewards, and then having a formal appeal mechanism. Another one, just that there's very important information that needs to get incorporated into it, and if you're trying to grapple with the fact that you have this really tight timeline that you're also working with. And then ultimately, I think I'll like that the that the group wants clear documentation on whatever the methodologies are and make sure that they're readily accessible. So those are the areas of emerging support. So just wanted to pause there. Is anything missing? Anything glaringly enacted, folks did. Let's keep checking along. All right. So Now we're trying to get into the devils in the detail pieces. And so there's their support, or at least maybe we're going to take acknowledgement on some of these things. Well, first one, support for having this hybrid model of both incentive and some sort of allocation framework. The part that folks are trying to grapple with is how much you have carrot versus the stick between the two of those. Oligon framework, as I had mentioned, that in concept folks are on board with the approach. Bayesian, as the RMS-based Wells framework, that one folks were saying it's they have some concern about it, but it's a starting point for now. We'll delve more into the details on these pieces for the next agenda item. Implementation. One of the challenges is that 2031 gives you kind of a bit of that a runway into all of this, and acknowledging that you do need something by January 2026 for your board. And as well as what you committed to in the revised and improved GSP, although just lots of concerns with what that looked like and trying to get all the timing right. So, feed-based triggers, just conceptually, using it fees before restrictions. Again, devil's in the details of there's some MOs that don't look right. So entities and MOs revisiting or are relooking and updating as needed. And the fact that the cost estimates for Sigma implementation are in the works right now. And so you're kind of trying to move forward with what information that you have right now. So again, the timing is a little bit back and forth. And that the concept of developing a water trading program, folks like that it allows for that individual decision making, that managing your own buyer portfolio. Though to get it right by January 2026 seems like a tall order for folks. And again, as I mentioned, economics consideration that analysis is important, but to get something done before January 2026 is unlikely. So what does that look like? Who's going to pay for developing that analysis, and when will it be completed? Those are all there's general support or acknowledgement that's what we are charged with and have to do, but there's still some concerns. Any red flags or folks generally okay with the question? All right, last piece. Polygon methodology. So I'm kind of actually going to talk about these things later. I'm going to brush go through this quickly. But the methodology for the polygon, how you define the boundaries, et cetera, grouping, all of the things, how they're used, flexibility with managing your water portfolio, as I mentioned, also thinking through that what are the mechanisms that for managing new development. Talk about legal review, and then there's several other topics that added from our ad hoc meeting. But one of them was that less discussed topics, though, but they are in Sigma, for instance, impacts with groundwater dependent ecosystems that have its own challenge, but there's monitoring, tracking, and evaluating progress, enforcement. So these are some of the, once you get a program, what's the implementation, monitoring, and evaluating, changing those pieces. Thinking through contingencies. And also, as we kind of heard, tracking states' priorities and their evaluation. So we're kind of observing that the state, they're becoming increasingly stringent. So these are some of the things that they're complex, they're still being worked on. This group will get as much as we can done by January 2026, but if there are areas where this group does not come to a broad recommendation, that's totally fine. What this group can do is be able to talk about, like, okay, what's next after January of 2026? What needs to be discussed? Who could be discussing it and some of the timelines? So all of these things can still move forward within the timeline that we're operating in. No red flags or anything like that. So scenarios, some of these things that folks have raised, we'll pull from them in our next meeting. But I want to acknowledge that folks have raised several kinds of examples and scenarios that we want to be to use. So I'm not going to actually go into a lot of the detail there because it'll come up in our next agenda item. But so stepping back, the thought is that this document, one, after today's meeting, I'm going to send out the Word version to you all, so that way you can, whatever edits and feedback you want to do, you can hold those in. But this is going to be very useful for the next steps, is that your feedback can go to the ad hoc, which will go to the commission. So that's where we're trying to make sure that we're capturing these. Is this accurately capturing the range of your perspective? Is it capturing the areas where emerging support and the areas where, like, we still have some issues and we still need to discuss? So the goal is get this to be accurate. Any questions for folks?
Then what's going to happen to this document?
It's going, obviously it's going to be published. That's the first bit, but also it's going to be reviewed in the next decision-making bodies in order to inform their decision-making process.
I see, I mean, at 3 o'clock yesterday, you were a little ridiculous, Stephanie, but that's kind of the way it goes, seems to be going, but the document that you had written, which I'm assuming is still in draft form. Yes, I've seen some modifications, but nothing substantive to reflect any of the stuff brought up in here.
Are you referring to the things that we have agreed to do already in this group, like the, obviously the definitions, is that?
Definitions.
The creation of the definition.
I'm talking about
the
fees and actions associated with trigger-based demand.
So the things that I know out of this group that we have agreed to modify are occurring. So that is that we're going to add a process by which someone who believes that they are being treated incorrectly or something is incorrect can appeal. So that's that standard appeal process. We all agreed and sat there and said that is something that we want to move forward. So we got concurrence on that one. We got concurrence on the idea that I do have this list, by the way. We have concurrence on the fact that we are going to make sure that all of the detailed language matches the definition pages. So when you have something that's defined in one place, it matches what is in the document in another. That will be changed. That process has already begun and is going to happen. We have had the addition of discussions on future water training programs being allowed within the program. So we're saying we are not defining a water training program right now. However, water training in the future is potentially an additive program to demand management. So that's going to be added to the document as requested as well.
Going to be a
yes.
So I didn't see that.
Yeah, no, there is not, until we sort of congeal all of these items that we are all have consensus on that we may or may not change. I'm not going to review the entire document until then. But we did agree that those things are going in there, and they will.
Okay.
You just got it recorded.
I'm sorry.
I said you just got to record it, so it will happen.
Okay, and then some other things that I brought up, wanted the group to discuss for the last three meetings now that have been brushed over with regard to this document. I see nothing has changed.
That's right, because we didn't reach consensus, so we're only making.
Well, we didn't really discuss. We didn't talk about it. Wait, huh?
Yeah, we didn't talk about
it. Well,
yeah.
We're going to talk about it some more today. So we have some of these things that are discussion points for this that we're going to have more discussions on today.
Okay.
All right.
So again, like this particular document is meant to be themes and overview. So it's certainly not going to be at the level of detail that is going to be in the triggers and management actions document. So both are going to be moving forward. This one is meant to help capture the thematic pieces. Let's have anything else then. I'm going to turn over to Justin on to talk about polygon approach and what you want me to
do. So first up, do you want to bring up the sheet you sent out discussing how we got to the polygon approach? I think that's maybe the first one we should just look at. All right. So if you remember early on in our discussion, we had some sort of talks about potential ways to manage groundwater and what data we have and how they can function, right? So those discussions were surrounded around actual city polygon methodology, groundwater condition-based discussions, land use-based discussions, and ET. All right, so you saw in this the sort of plus and minuses, and coming out of that, generally, we had consensus to proceed with outlining true thesis, which is the methodology which was ultimately chosen to be outlined and put in the straw proposal. The reasons for that, I think, are that it is innately objective, meaning there is not an assumption that goes into the creation of a Thiessen polygon. It is a mathematical equation that creates equidistance from a monitoring point. And so there is nothing in there that would be considered a subjective decision-making. It is purely objective. Next, that on the other side of that, it sort of avoids the bias of saying, we think that conditions are different versus here, when we don't have definitive evidence to support that differentiation, right? Whenever you go down the road of making a rule, if you do not have definitive evidence to support your decision, it will ultimately come to question. All right. Automatically updates based on conditions and within the groundwater monitoring network. So as conditions change, it so therefore automatically changes the response to demand management within those polygon sections. What are the drawbacks? It does not have as much hydrological input as maybe some of the other methodologies could. As we have already stated, though, we don't necessarily have enough data to say there is a distinct hydrological line, one location versus another. Potential divisions across similar operations. So you could have a large property that scales multiple polygons, right? That could then be changing the way you manage water within your own operation. May split up water portfolios. So that's the one where you have seven operations across a sub-basin, and you will be asked to manage them differently because they are different polygons entirely, not necessarily contiguous. So you have the contiguous broken into multiple polygons, non-contiguous across multiple polygons. How do you manage your water portfolio? Assumptions and uncertainty assumes monitoring wells represent the area within the polygon. assumes additional wells in the future to improve monitoring network. Keep in mind that anything that you put in needs a period of time to create a record in order to have an MO that meets that and then be the monitoring point for that polygon. Also, just remember, we have some wells that have shorter durations that are already in place that by that 2030 type deadline, we'll have 10 years and we can discuss that when we add those in place. So key considerations, we are required to put something together by the first of next year. It has a relatively low implementation cost. The both the state and from what I am hearing so far, from what I've seen in legal reviews, it is objective. Currently, Thiessen polygon systems are used worldwide for resource management. It's a common methodology used for resource management. And it needs that regular review cycle that is built into the program in order to be successful and flexible. All right, and then the other ones all have these, all of them have at least some amount of subjective activity built into them. ET, we do not have data that tells us the separation between groundwater, surface water use, natural water use, creating the ET output. So unless you have that information, you cannot separate water use or water consumption from water consumption by a tree, right? They're not necessarily the same thing. And so you create a scenario by which you must assume what water is going where into ET. That data does not currently exist. And to be honest with you, would be very difficult to make it exist for certain.
I'm not following.
So ET, which is measuring the evapotranspiration rate of a leaf in a tree, right?
Or any,
does not say where the source of that water is. So it doesn't differentiate source. And therefore, using ET to calculate applied water creates issues that are highly challengeable because you can't say with any definitive output where that water came from.
Not applied water, but used water.
Right. The water the tree is actually using,
or
where did that water come from? Right.
Right.
Even things like humidity in the air create different issues in that. How much precipitation there are is where the water source is, et cetera, et cetera. And so it creates issues with ET that can in fact be questioned because they are assumptive.
Where are you?
I'm going for you.
Before we move on,
go ahead.
So you can get pretty darn close.
You can.
You can estimate what's in the soil to start the year, and then it's just checking account deal between what's applied and what's he measured it weekly in the ET, and we've got pretty damn good data on that. And if it's not in a water district and they're irrigating, it's coming from a hole in the ground. Where you might end up with some variability is where you've got blended, you know, surface in well water, and those are not very healthy. So I think for the year, for the annual consumption, you can come pretty close.
I think we can come pretty close. And I think we can I think using ET as the confirmation tool that helps us understand where water is being used and also helps us potentially understand areas that we need to investigate as we move forward is a reasonable thing to do. But however, if you actually talk to the consultant about ET and what it takes to put something like that in place and the effort and the data you would need to even get to where you're talking about, that lift is heavy and difficult.
It's out there already.
But it's ET, just to make sure on the same page, ET is the total consumption.
Yeah.
So you might probably have on a deeper rooted tree 12 inches of rainfall water in the soil profile. So it's ET minus
starting.
I just want to be clear.
It's because you've got native water already. Who's the fellow that publishes the weekly? Pierce sends out an email every week. it's reasonably accurate, I think. It gives us a pretty good idea of what, you know, what the trees are burning every week of the year.
Yeah, it gives you a confirmation at this point.
It does do that. So I wouldn't throw it out completely. It's a great tool. It's cheap.
Yeah, no, we're not saying we don't want to use it as a tool. We're saying we don't want to use it as a primary source for management.
Right.
That's those of that, I agree. It is a tool that we need to keep in our pocket.
Just to clarify, you're really just making a cause of whether I use ET to develop a polygon or not, according to this table. Is that correct?
Not develop a polygon or not. Use it as the management approach.
Polygon approach is comparison table. So
yeah, so we're saying the polygon compared to the other methodologies.
Yeah, I was going to say you need to relabel this.
So what
you're trying to define here are what is the best method to create the boundaries for groundwater management within that boundary? So
yep.
Currently proposed is that we use the true Thiessen approach to create management boundaries, and we apply groundwater management within those specific boundaries. We're taking that further, apply it across polygons that are like
correct.
in status.
That's correct.
Right. So the discussion is the decent polygon the right approach for creating the boundaries, or should we group areas in other ways?
In other ways.
Right. Yes. So one of those ways would be use within a boundary, creating a boundary based upon the water use inside of that boundary, which would be to say that all of the ET, in the case of ET, it's a, if you have a whole bunch of crops that use similar ET within this range, you we're going to create a boundary around
those.
Right. So you can imagine, like, starting from the diversion dam down to the city of Tehama, or even a little further down to Holmes Creek, I guess, almost entirely walnuts, probably, or almonds, or, you know, all the way out to Highway 99 or even further. That might be about a grouping.
Could potentially be.
But it currently has two or three polygons across there. One of those polygons, the little point, goes from the Sacramento River later on out to I-5.
Yeah, and we'll also talk about that. And
that's so the Sacramento that's what we're discussing, is how do we create these polygons?
That's right.
Or how do we create areas of management? They may not even be polygons, but areas of management, areas of the groundwater demand management.
Well said.
Okay.
It's
a little confusing.
So
polygon approaches comparison is saying
polygons to other boundary methods.
How do we draw boundaries around areas at such that we can manage the groundwater inside of that area appropriately?
Yeah. So groundwater conditions based, land use based, which is somewhat similar as well, grouping it together by, say, crop types or things of that nature.
Yes.
Grouping it together by conditions, which actually the Thiessen approach actually takes into account some of that groundwater condition based thought process within it. So now let's talk a little bit about. Let's talk about the little. Let's show some of the responses to the questions we've had so far in regard to this. So maybe we start with Bill. Bill brought up this idea that it's not representative of what he sees in his own wells, right? When, as you get farther away from the river, there is much more fluctuation. You're closer to the river, it's much more stable within his own well systems. Will you bring up the polygon map that's in our data viewer?
I might add to that. It's just not the case of the property I was talking about. It actually, it just briefly mentioned that a bit ago, that area starts at Brittenbank Creek and goes through to Thomas Creek.
We'll talk about it. We'll look at this right now.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So, first off, one important notation to make. Within the document that you guys have received right now, there is no set RMP or RMS. Zero. RMPs and RMSs must be decided prior to action is taken in 2031. So if you see your definition sheet, there's a deadline to make that happen prior. So this is just showing you what a system could look like. And right now, with the data we have, what would be recommended to break it into? There will be more data at that time, likely some more wells that we could use because we'll have 5 more years of data. And also there will be have to be discussion about laying out those representative monitoring points and creating MTs and MMs. Okay, that is included with this plan. That's something that has to happen after the
process. Not when you're using those to draw your bulk ones.
Because they are innate. So once you create an RMS or an RMP, the polygon happens automatically. There's no selection process of polygon. It's based on a mathematical distance from your points. So if you're selecting your RMPs, you're setting MOs and MTs for them, the polygon's created automatically. So, okay, but,
so are you saying the current program, the draft, demand management plan is not taking into account this picture?
Only in the sense that this is an example of what it could be, not in the sense that this is what it is.
Really?
Correct.
So the demand management plan just says
you will have to select RMPs and RMSs with MMOs and MDs prior to the action happening. So in 2030, you have to select those points. By 2030, you have to select the end of 2030, you have to select those points with those MMOs and MDs.
That's kind of a big deal because people are using this mapping to create their opinion about the
how they should proceed.
Right. What happens to me or what happens to this area and the presumption is that this is the method that's going to be used. And you're saying we're gonna manage groundwater
via a specific method.
Via a method, and the method is yet to be determined.
No, the method is not yet to be determined.
No.
The method is written.
The specific.
The location of the RMPs and RMPs.
That will be,
the method in this is case, there.
These are polygons.
These are polygons.
But these may
you select an RMP, say you select this one as your RMP, this one as an RMP, or 5 of them, or 10 of them, or all of them. Ultimately, you're going to get a recommendation from staff that says, and ultimately, you're going to get a recommendation from staff that says every viable well should be used as RMP. Because the reason why that is because the less granularity you have, the higher level of accurate representation you have. Right? As you get farther and farther and farther away from your monitoring site, there is more and more and more risk that it is not representative of what is hydrologically happening underneath.
Right. These were drawn. These are decent polygons, correct?
These are decent polygons drawn. These are our RMS and RMP sites currently within the model. Everything yellow, everything blue.
And what you just said prior to
are ones that were recommended that meet the criteria to be an RMS.
Right.
These currently meet the criteria
have right now to use.
You just said that staff may recommend instead of using one of those blue dots, there could be 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 of those blue dots.
So this is the data that we have right now that could potentially be used, right? So within 5 years, how many more wells will we have that could have 10 years of data, right? And then could be used as a 10-year rolling average? Just a few more. Ultimately, though, right? There's going to have to be and a decision that says we are going to use this well or we are not going to use this well. Here is its MO and here is its MT. Because this methodology by which you manage requires an MO and an MT to exist within an RFP. And all of these orange dots do not have those. Does that make sense?
It does, but yeah.
So
saying that changes the perspective of the conversation around.
Yeah, and you remember when we very first presented this, the statement was these are the recommended ones.
Yeah.
Right. So, but let's talk a little bit about Bill's situation here.
RP4. Use RP4 as the
scroll back in. Yeah.
She's going to zoom into it for us to
yeah.
see why
where it is.
Why it's a good example to talk about.
RP4. So this is from, you can see right here, inside of Truckee Avenue to the river in this point, including Gerber, El Camino area, and a lead just above the town of Tehama, right? So this is that polygon that is created, right? And Bill, this one is on your property, Bill, RB4. What are the locations of the other wells that are on your property that you say are significantly different?
There's six wells east of the canal.
Over here. East of the canal. Over here. Yeah, so over here somewhere.
Right on the river.
Yep. Perfect. So go ahead and click on RB4 and bring up the hydrograph for it.
The well that's used to make that polygon is the well that's just south of Gerber Road and just east of 99 and W.
That's correct. That's a good description of it. Yeah. Sorry to bring that back up. All right. And you can see here, we already discussed this. Because none of the MOs and MTs are set for the purpose of demand management yet, this obviously will need to be changed. MOs, when they were done for the purpose of groundwater sustainability plans, were done with one idea in mind, right? MOs associated with management, demand management, should probably be reviewed in every scenario in order to set a practical methodology to manage demand, right? Ultimately, if you look at this right here, historically, in this well, you will see this right here would have some management action associated with it. This is from 30 years ago, right? So this can't be used for the purposes of demand management as an MO. Those will need to be reset, which is part of what this document says. But one thing we can show here is that generally speaking, there is a falling water level here. There is recovery during some of the wet season, and you can see that this is a fairly decent recovery during a good rain year. Can we go zoom out just a little bit, and we'll select another polygon?
Before you leave that one,
yeah, go ahead.
Why was that specific low endpoint chosen? Because it's the lowest trim level that well has ever recorded.
I wouldn't worry about those peak things. Those are old from the GSP. They've never been extended out since then.
What, red bottom line?
No, he's talking about the peak slope.
This is a little, yeah,
the peak slope has not been changed for the new data yet.
It looks lower.
So now it would be up there at that other dot that's the last one.
Yeah, it would be almost flat.
Well, no, not even.
Well, I mean,
not
flat. It wouldn't show what it's showing right now.
That's correct. It would be to here.
It'd be up higher.
It would be right here.
Even better if you look at the average of all of those.
Yeah. To be perfectly honest with you, I don't care about that right now. It has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Okay, so.
And that one is done this point this year, this point this year.
Yeah.
It's not a actual
house. It's just a line showing.
Sure.
So
yeah.
They trend from point to point. So.
Let's go back out. So first of all, let's look at one inland that we have a good hydro on every freeze plant. All right, farther away from the river, what happens is there is a significantly slower recovery rates, right? Because there's not as much influx from the river of water from good water here. Right. And B, this significant drawdown is required to happen in order for the river to show a drop. Wells by the river will show a drop significantly later than wells inland. If you look at that hydrograph before, that plane is something like this, right? It's following this at a later date. The reason why that is because you're pumping out of a bathtub. The spigot to the bathtub is the river. It takes time for the water to get from that point to this point. That is the transience or the transmissivity of water. That's that calculation associated with how fast water moves from one point.
But you're assuming loss away from the river on these distant wells when it's in fact the opposite. It's coming from the mouth.
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. That right, but it, even if that is the case, right, and you have water going like this, river, mountain, right, the water has a hydraulic static level that it wants to be at. That's here. But when you draw water out of a location, that static is affected, and it takes time for the water to move from one location to another. That's the transmissivity speed of water, which is in the math associated with creating demand management.
Stephanie, can you move that up so we can see the bottom scale, please? Thank you.
But when measured as height above mean sea level, it's always it's higher in the west than it is toward the river.
Correct. Yes, there there is transient water moving towards the river all of the time, right? But removing, if you look at the way this thing functions, and you can look at every single hydrograph if you want to, they delay, right? They delay to the river, meaning that the fall that you see here, this dramatic fall that you see inland, is delayed closer to the river. Therefore, what we're saying is, if in order for a management action to happen on a river area, it is going to be significantly after a management happens in an interior area. And the fix for that, which is the reduction of demand, will be part of the fix of the declining slope in the river area. Right? So an inland effect on a river-based problem. The river-based RMS is delayed. This one's earlier than this one, right? And when you take that into account, when this one falls and you end up managing it first, it will have a net positive effect on the adjacent river polygon. So let's also look at some other river locations.
I just want to pause though.
We have a river
tracking.
So you do have a river influence polygon.
Well, okay, but we don't have an RMS well to track what's going on.
Well, let's help with that. Let's get something that are closer to the river, like RV 12. Why don't you slow that one? That's pretty close to the river. All right. So this one, really nice long history, way back when. If you look. And I know that this is not the same granularity, so it's difficult to see this, right? The scale is significantly different. But if you actually look, and if we detail this out in this hydrograph, there is a falling trend in this hydrograph, right? It's not insignificant. There is a very real falling trend in this hydrograph.
It's 5 feet.
Yeah, 5-6 feet. That's right. And so that falling trend, if you go look at the data compared to the previous one, mirrors at a later period of time, the same drop.
Well,
therefore, I'm just telling you, it's a physical fact.
Well, what do you get? Well, what's your point?
The point is that if just because you do not have an RMS directly adjacent to the river does not mean that an RMS point inland is not representative of what's happening in those wells adjacent to the river. It's slowly.
We have a well that's been almost 100 years.
That may be.
It's just true.
So, all this stuff about how west affected it doesn't happen.
That's not what the hydrographs say.
Well, you can measure the well.
It's delayed and greatly suppressed.
It's delayed and suppressed.
I mean, that's right. The variability on that well is less than 10 feet over the last 70 years.
Yeah.
So that's pretty suppressed.
It is delayed and suppressed, but it does mimic.
Mimic? I don't know, but they influence each other.
Sure.
Let's just presume that what you're saying is accurate, which I think it's largely accurate, but not empirically directly related, because it goes both ways, right? There's an influence on some of those wells from the river,
we're going to talk a little bit about that.
How the river is managed in any given year, versus what the hydrology is coming from the foothills to the river, right?
Yep.
Go both ways.
How much water is there to give for both directions?
So, yeah. So that's the point to counterpoint what you just said, that they mimic each other because they may or may not, but. Regardless, the issue that I think, apart from what you're describing, is that what Steve said is that if the wells, let's say, would have measured the distance within the 100-year floodplain.
Yes.
If you say you must manage that, those wells within a 100-year floodplain with the same amount of demand management, positive or negative demand management, as the well that's sitting over there on 99W, based off of what's happening with the well on 99W, that I think is the point of contention. Is that correct?
It's a good point.
And it goes all the way for me to the assumption that these polygons can go from the far west side. I mean, there is no way.
There aren't any that go to the far west side.
Okay.
I mean, that's one right.
RB4 gets close to that. It doesn't quite get to I-5, but
it doesn't matter.
But I can tell you that I farm all the way inside of that polygon, like Bill does. We farm from the river to I-5 almost.
Yes.
Right? And we have wells along Elder Creek and Tom Creek, all that area. So you do too. So we know empirically, based off of our measurement with our well sounding tool, that the movement of the standing water level in our wells on any given year and the impacts of the water year
is less than the interior ones. And that is a true statement.
Yeah.
Yeah. The variation of well elevation adjacent to the source is going to be different than the variation distant from the source. It's a fact.
Okay. So let's no question. So let's just throw in this. You're taking the approach, I'll say you. The approach is being taken that if a well, let's say on the west side of 99W,
yeah,
is having problems with falling, with drastically falling or significantly falling standing water levels.
Causes the demand management to kick in.
So correct. It causes the demand management to kick in. And then that well that's within the 100-year floodplain is going to be treated, or all the acres farmed within that 100-year floodplain is going to be treated the same way as the acres that are being farmed over there west of 99W. And so Steelman, your reason why that should be true.
Yeah. So looking at this one more time, if you reduce draft in this location, you innately increase water movement from here to here. So you are in that point. We already know this because if you look at the water trends, and we've seen this online, and I know that Mike can tell me the same thing, in many of these places, there are troughs here. And the reason why there are troughs here is because water goes like this, right? Because that's that source that we're talking about. We're going like this, right?
The source from the foothill.
So you have the source from the foothill, the source from the river, and you're creating a trough.
Where those that statement
but come that from. Reduction, I mean, it just is. I can bring up the contour.
We certainly don't have the granularity of data to prove what you just said.
That's right.
We have a contour, a lot of them
talking. The contours all fall toward the river.
No, they don't.
Show me one.
That's not true.
We have measured above sea level.
Hold on.
Can
you help? Maybe you can steel man that easier, but he's steel man.
Well, I understand. So I was using the word crop, and I was thinking more of a channelized crop, and that's what kind of showed us not what we're talking about.
Okay.
It's just a, in the Carlingford Basin, I would say in the Hamilton City area, we consistently see a depression.
Okay.
And that's, I think it's what you're referring to.
And north of there. It travels well north of there.
So in places within the basin, there are areas where there's a depression away from the river.
Yeah, we're actually pulling in, probably pulling in the river. To that area,
I could understand that.
That's a 30,000 foot approach that may or may not apply in each of these polygons. That's the problem.
That's right, and it still doesn't account for my counter argument to say it doesn't make sense. Or what many of us are saying is it doesn't make sense to manage the well within the 100-year floodplain and the groundwater use within that area in the same way. That is the groundwater use clear over close to I-5, like approaching I-5.
So the problem with...
That's the inherent issue with the polygons.
Yeah, I just want we have that on the list, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a list of inherent problems on the polygons. It may or they may not perfectly represent what we're saying it represents because it's just a mathematical equation of distance.
Okay.
However... I
can change this.
Okay. Yes.
So we're talking about this polygon level. I don't think anyone really supports... what we're talking about managing at this level.
Okay.
But the way I look at this is that this is really good to get a sense of what's happening at groundwater elevations in that, within that geographic area. That's what that well does for me. Okay, that's what that monitor point does. It's a reflection of what could be happening. But then Justin joined those things based on sustainability. Yeah. Yield, safe yield.
Can you
now click on the safe yield? The poly's changed, right?
It's
there in the management area. Now, I'm not so saying I support that.
Yeah.
Saying these management areas now change. So he's got more of a river poly that it begins to
because they're grouped.
Yes. It's group poly's. So see that grouping there that it doesn't show up well, but that's a grouping of poly's. He's managing that, right?
So 50% of these wells would have to, by the way, this is not what it looks like in 2031. However, right now, what the data is showing, that this area right here would be managed like.
I understand.
And half of the wells would have to show the condition shown in each of the steps or be below MD in order to cause the action to take place. And so what you're saying is right now, based on the data, these have similar characteristics and would be managed the same. However, as conditions change over time, it could be that this one has a falling wall or water level, the calculation changes, and then it could be in this category.
Goes with those guys.
Or this one to go into a higher level, right, where it is recovering more quickly and is mathematically isolated and treated as its own. We don't know that because it's solely based on the condition within the well. The groundwater level within the well is the highest level multiplier that for the outcome of whether this is grouped within one or another.
And
And those are 10-year changes in colors as represented on the map there would happen based off of 10-year rolling average.
That's right. And so the issue that we have talked about with what you're saying, and by the way, I don't disagree with you. If we could ideally say, hey, we want this script, whatever this script is, right, to be managed in one way, and we want to be able to prove that it is different than the others, and we have monitoring wells on that site, that would be super ideal. I would agree with you, right? The problem is that it's highly subjective to say this area for whatever dimension this is different than this area, right? Creating that line, we do not have data to support.
Yeah, it's as subjective as the other way.
No, this is objective. This is 100% objective because it is just a mathematical calculation of distance.
It's objective.
So it is defensible because it is used worldwide as a resource management tool and has stood the test.
But it may be all those things, but it's also grossly inaccurate.
I would disagree with that statement. I think it is relatively inaccurate.
One of my problems is I look at in the Red Bluff subbasin, RB2 or RB9, you've got that in the same group as you do RB7. And I would argue that along the river there's no comparison between. But they're grouped.
Can you show the actual base layer map so that we can scroll in on RB2 and we can take a look at what that ground looks like adjacent to the river like that? So right up here, there's base map. Will you select image hybrid? Roll up to the top of what he's talking about here in RB2. Scroll into this with the river crosses.
Just at the river.
Yeah, that's why. RB2 at the river. You're talking about, this is South Main of Red Bluff right here.
Okay.
Right? Prior to becoming 99, the PC's down here somewhere. This is county. The reason why it's treated in a similar way is because it does not have the same demand. And so it's unlikely to fall at the same rate as the well adjacent to it. It's a realistic, this is the airport right here. What you were talking about is that your fear is that this somehow gets managed differently than this area right here along this river. There is no irrigated agriculture within that space. Zero. It's cattle. So
it's not that it's managed the same or differently than what's immediately south of it. It's that it's managed the same as something that's 10 miles to the west of it. That's the disconnect I have.
And that's solely because of we don't have a monitoring point up here, right? We know this. We don't have a monitoring point up there. But let's just be clear. That issue that you're referring to doesn't exist in reality, right? Because if you said we are going to restrict that to 2 acre feet per acre, there is nobody for it to affect.
So immediately south there is.
But that's here. That's in this.
Make a proposal and move the conversation.
Yeah, maybe we should.
Okay.
We still have things that we need
this as with a consensus of it.
I would like to make one other point. It's valid, but that monitoring well RB4 is nowhere in represents the calculate sustainable yield off of it. It nowhere represents the sustainable yield in that part.
You are going to calculate safe yield off of it. Sustainable yield is the average of all the polygon decline characteristics. Safe. Those are two totally different things.
Okay.
They are related in math to each other, but right. They are definitely not the same thing.
And that's full concept.
Low concept.
But
yeah,
because so much of that polygon is affected by the river, that the safe yield is going to be a whole lot different.
And I want to say this. I am not telling you that you're wrong, right? I agree that right by the river, there is way more water availability. It's true. The problem is that there is no way to define that availability, one. And two, there is going to be regulation about removing water from the river coming soon. And even if you did define it, it will not be in your best interest in the future.
That's a different discussion. So
it does have a negative effect.
Your first statement is only true because there is not a monitoring well there.
100%.
Okay. So yep. if you had a monitoring well within the 100-year floodplain, then it would change the shape of this polygon.
It would.
So that's
no.
We don't have it today. So, all right. So here was where I was. I said to Hal, we're not going to change this approach. I don't believe that we, no matter what we say, not because of you, but because of whether it's DWR or the worldwide consensus of hydrologic engineers, we're going to probably end up with a decent polygon approach to defining the boundaries of groundwater management within the subsurface.
Yeah,
eventually.
That's the starting point.
No.
Yeah.
Eventually. Well,
eventually.
Yeah, eventually. So arguing about or discussing and getting to the finer details of this, much of which we don't have enough data to be able to really do well and or knowledge or expertise is not quite the whole fruitful, you know. So
fair.
What we need to, I think, get to is that we are the demand management plan that the draft demand management plan, which starts with that the actions associated with trigger-based demand management.
By the way, that's only 50% of the plan. Remember, the first part of the plan is the incentive-based actions. Right? That's the first
part. Okay. But that's what needs to be approved and put in place on a date certain, right? And what you said earlier, I did not know that this all doesn't need to be clearly defined or even proposed, the map itself.
At any given time.
The boundary
until
2031.
Almost 5 years.
We determine. Or what we determine. So, yes, but Stephanie said it could be different, or the approach could be different. I don't believe it will be. It's probably still going to be decent polygon based. But
the number and location of the RMS sites is yet to be determined.
Yes. Okay. So can we make the presentation of the demand management plan with the complete absence of any of this, let's be put on the screen.
No maps.
No maps.
Yeah. We'll no RMSs. This is it right here. This is the presentation, right? It describes the process of decent polygons.
Yes.
And how it will be determined once the RMSs and RFPs exist.
Okay.
Yes.
Within that document, when it's proposed, highlighted bold letters, extra large font, whatever you want to do, is to say that it has not been defined.
Yes.
Do not reference these maps, because these maps are not what we're saying in what we're going to manage to.
Yes.
The concept.
This is just a tool being used to describe what it could look like.
If those actions kicked in today,
that's what it would look like.
In my opinion, you don't want that on based on the day. It's an outline, and that's why I kept referring to the idea of an outline on this plan. It's an outline without these specifics, because they are not.
It's an outline with fixed rules by which it ultimately goes into effect, right? So we're saying, A, there are not RMS / RMP sites selected right now, but they must be selected by December of 2030.
Okay.
Right? And that gives everybody the time to sit in rooms and say, here is the best data outcome we can come up with.
Okay.
Does that make some sense?
It does, and that's what I'm proposing to move forward with, instead of spending a lot of time debating the validity of the outlines of decent polygons and where it's on a map that may or may not be true.
Yeah, you're going forward.
Okay.
100%.
It is true that we will need to do command management within boundaries.
And even this tells you we're going to use decent. right? It's just saying it's Thiessen.
Okay.
But what the center point of that Thiessen is not determined.
Okay.
Right? Because I just can't get around. I've been talking to everybody. I can't get around the idea of setting it with something other than something that's completely, you know.
I think it's been clear to me for a while that that's what we're going to end up with. And we don't have an expert knowledge base to defend or debate anything different.
Sure.
Right. Okay. So it's not that I give up or give in or acquiesce. It's just the reality of the situation.
Okay. I guess I'm disappointed so far of where this is going. So, you know, what I wanted to see come out of this is an approach to this divide out the sub-basin where our future is a little bit better defined. And by that, I mean growers in the valley.
Yes.
They know what to expect. They know what's coming down. I think we could have gotten there. I still think we can get there. And again, I agree with this approach as a first cut, but I think there's more data to look at and to begin to make these calls. The other thing too, and this is an overall big general discussion, is that this thing that we're going to kick the can to 2030 or 2031 doesn't really jive with, you know, and I think that's one of DWR's concerns, is that we're going to mitigate, but we're not going to impact supply. You know, we're not going to address the supply problem, especially in the corn sub-basin. And looking at the end report and all the MTs were exceeding there, the potential for undesired results, we're just going to mitigate wells. We're not going to really think about supply issues in that area. That's what I hear here.
So, can I say something? Let me,
I'm not done. So I think the thing is, for me, is that we're going to have these voluntary measures. I don't know how they're going to be applied. We don't have goals for them. We don't have any way of monitoring whether they're successful or not. We haven't talked about that stuff. And therefore, you know, we basically have this loose program until 2030, and then all of a sudden, somehow we've migrated to polygon or a decent polygon, whatever it is. That's what I'm hearing here. I know there's a lot's going to happen in the next several years. It's like, no, I look at this as a, and one of the things I really appreciate about this approach is the flexibility involved here. You know, these RMS wells are showing recovery. That's a real positive. You have the vehicle to deal with that. So I guess, you know, what I'm hoping to do is at least show some other data. I don't know if we're going to have time for it. You know, I want to show the AEM data, you know, for these sub-basins. I want to show sub-watershed boundaries for these basins and let you see this data and say, okay, are you really married to Tyson polygons or not? Okay. So that's right.
I just let me respond. Because I started that, you were responding to me.
No,
my intention of that comment was not to say, let's kick the can down the road or not have meaningful discussion around it. The point is that there's a date by which we need to bring this forward. And if we don't bring it forward in some way that's acceptable to DWR, they're going to do it for us, right? And so I'm saying, let's put together the framework, which I think we've got a pretty good framework going here, and there's parts of it that we disagree with and parts of it that we do agree with, but the actual implications of the application of the format won't be determined until we have the actual maps themselves, and we don't have to have the maps to have the demand management framework in place. And snap, I don't think you get away from supply or demand reduction or increased supply. All the things that those are all components of it. They have to be. I'm saying it's not that we should ignore that those would be components of it, or that we're saying that they're not going to be all of them. So we're just saying the map as it stands in this example
is not acceptable to me. Therefore, please don't integrate it into the demand management plan today. There will be a map, and there will be management within those zones. It could be that map. It's my hope and desire that it's not that map.
Right.
Okay, because of the things we've been discussing.
I guess my concern is that we're not going to address this in the near term. And this, I do want to address this in the near term. And
the plan requires you to.
Well, and we could look at this work plan, you know, that we're going to have to develop, you know, in 2026. I said, okay, well, maybe we can outline our approach to coming up with this. You know, this mapping or these polygons, but I really want the work plan effort to actually define what it is. You know, let's build these polygons or whatever these management areas within this window, which we have until summer of 2026 to do that, and then call it good. Now, it's going to be subject to change. And we know that, but at least we'll have a concept laid out. This is how we want to go.
The reason why I don't want to do what you described is because I don't want to box ourselves in and have to crawl out of that box.
I hear you.
Okay. If we put this forward as an example, it could be construed as the plan, and I'm afraid of that. Because I would like another bite at
the apple. It will be the plan until you figure out how to crawl out of the box. It's more harmful than what you're saying.
Yeah,
I'm still like, we're working on a date here that we got to get to. Let's get as broadly defined as acceptable. Get it over that finish line, and then let's continue to find it then.
I think will help just really quick. I just think it's important. There is a deadline requirement for setting the RFPs, and the MOs and MTs associated with. We currently don't even have MOs and MTs for a significant number of the wells that we could possibly use to collect this data and create decent polygons. And we do not have the ability before 2026, January 1, to create those MOs and MTs. And so ultimately,
what are we missing? Sorry, just so I'm clear.
So we have to set the elevations by which the triggers go into place in each of those. If we chose that map, right? Let's just say we chose that map.
Yeah.
We would still have to then select the levels by which the triggers go into effect for every one of those four spots.
Show the map.
So yeah.
Isn't that just empirical data that exists?
It's not.
Oh, really? We have
take data and we...
Correct.
Figured out.
Yeah, there's Ian was part of this process. He knows.
Yeah.
There was a lift. It's no
it much.
Yeah.
So that's these red and green lines.
Yeah. So these ones. No, back to that map. Sorry. Back to the map.
And then zoom out.
Perfect. Zoom out. So our problem is this: blue has MOs and MTs set for it already.
Okay.
They are true RMS sites that we know exist.
Okay.
Every one of these orange dots is a well that would meet the basic definition of an RMS site. However, we do not have any of the trigger methodologies put in. The MO and the MTs are not set. And so all we are saying by this is saying, hey, we do not have that information, but we are gonna use a thesis polygon approach. We are gonna do it around an RMS site. We just need to lock down the RMS sites and set the MOs and MTs for them. This is what we could use right now.
That further supports what his concept was that he was proposing.
Yeah, it still has, it has backbone to it. You don't do it, there will be a problem. It is a requirement to make that happen by December 1st, 2030.
Yeah.
You have to do it. It's still there. The only thing that we don't have is this piece of data. I am not confident we would even be able to come close to get there. So we have to leave this little bit out of it for now. To your point, trying to make that happen is not, I don't think it's feasible. And so that's what we're leaving out. It's not taking away the responsibility to do it. It's just setting a deadline to make it happen. Does that make sense?
All right, I'm going to do a pen check.
So that what you, yeah, just one thing, just follow up. It could be that those blues
could all, even though they have MOs and T's associated with them right now, that could change.
It could.
Right. There's some that don't make sense. So another reason why we don't want to define it.
Let me read you this out of the RMS RMP description that's in this definition sheet that I sent you guys, because I think this will help. Use interchangeable within various GSPs. So it says RMP or RMS interchangeably in multiple different GSPs throughout this area. So we're using both terms. They mean the same thing. Representative monitoring points or representative monitoring sites are facilities that are monitored for groundwater level at least twice per year, spring and fall. RMS, RMP, RMS are the single point used in the creation of these in polygons. Prior to December 30th, 2030, and reviewed in five-year intervals thereafter, the Tehama County Flood Control and Water Conservation District Board of Directors, based on recommendations from the Groundwater Commission and staff, will ratify by resolution a network of RMP RMS with appropriate MO and MT for the purpose of groundwater demand management. RMS RMP should contain 10 years of somewhat consistent monitoring.
That's true.
Okay, so, all right, I'm gonna do a time check.
It's on purpose.
It's fine. Yeah.
Here's what I'm hearing thus far. This group, what they're comfortable with going to the commission / the board within, you know, now and in December, is that in general, some sort of management area, zone, polygon approach, fine. Do not show the map, because that's going to be misinterpreted and it's not ready for the public eye yet. So that's what I'm hearing from there. I'm also hearing in general that the group wants a certain level of specificity, so that way they can kind of calculate how is this going to affect me. I'm also hearing that this group is wanting, like, don't take things off of the table. There might be additional information that becomes available after that's not ready by December or January, but it's going to be coming in available in the next coming years. So that way we have a much better idea of what we're doing by 2030. The AEM, can the AEM, the evapotranspiration, those various things, can they be good enough? Whether or not they're a confirmation tool. Whether or not they can be, so that way, what I'm hearing from this group is they don't want to be restricted in a way that,
the location of the monitoring sites.
Yeah, like getting restricted to preliminary and when their water levels are actually behaving nicely. So that's what this group is.
I would ask the group. I mean, you heard that from Brendan and me, but I'm not sure
That's what I'm hearing.
Right. Does everybody feel comfortable with what we're defining right here? This idea that, hey, we are going to use a Thiessen polygon approach. Hey, we are going to surround them around a representative monitoring location, but we do not know for sure which ones those are, and we still have to set them with the appropriate MOs and MTs prior to a specific deadline date. We already were not going to have these actions take place until a date after that, and therefore it does not change the actual floor activity that says we are going to reduce demand if necessary. That date does not change. It's still there. It's still a requirement. All we are saying is we have work to do with this parameter of how we are going to define these polygons, and that's what we want to move forward with.
Okay.
That's what we're kind of pulling the group for.
But at the same time, those wells, we need to start with those wells defining MO and MTs. Because they got our best knowledge, best information we have, and then we add to from there.
Yes. We got to start with
We have to get those done soon.
It's going
to
take us a while.
Because if we push off and say to the board that, well, even the wells that we have good data on, we're not going to say they're going to be until possibly December 30th, then they're going to immediately put in well moratorium in February next year and stop right there, because they're not going to tolerate any just taken hand in there.
I agree. Yeah. I think that if we describe this thing correctly, like we're doing right now, that it does factually have teeth, there is a requirement to get it done, and that we are going to have to start working on it now to get there. I have really high hopes that that is going to be acceptable to them. Obviously, it's voted on, and I don't know, so I can't promise you anything, but I really have high hopes that that will be acceptable. So
you have to have the framework. The framework has to be based in reality. It can't just be a
level of maybe it's even statement or something along the lines that defining MOs and MTs with potential RMS well, or defining the RMS wells with MOs and MTs will begin in March of 26 to be completed by.
It's currently underway.
I mean, immediately. I think the term should be used immediately.
Yeah, I mean,
we're starting with that today.
Are you confident that we've got enough data on those 4-inch proposed wells to proceed to develop?
I will say 90% of them. There's a couple of them that already have 6 years.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, there's no
data yet, so you got
90%. Yes, yeah, 90% yes, 10% maybe need a couple more years of development time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I mean, there's enough to get started.
Yes.
And I think we should prioritize getting started on those.
Agreed.
Because again, we keep kicking it down the road.
It looks bad.
It does. And it's not productive. It's not getting us any closer to where
we need. And the more we do on it now with us, we have to do it last minute. That's always going to eat us if you try to do that.
I agree with the concept. I'd like to hear what it's everybody, if you agree or not.
You should.
Did I agree with the concept? There's areas that need action before 2030, probably, that has to be addressed.
That's an interesting statement. And by the way, I have a sneaking suspicion that you might be right.
Can you restate that?
He's basically saying there are some places that before 2030 you're going to have so many problems we're going to be forced to address, basically, right? Before that time frame. But ultimately, here's what I'll say about that bill. We have this other set of backstops below it, which is that if we do start causing undesirable results in those areas, we're buying those people's wells. Because we're creating a well mitigation program that says, hey, if there's overdraft in this area and your well goes dry, we're going to go test to see if it's dry. If it is dry, we're buying you a well. And that way, that is that, you know, ultimately at some point, everybody that's an agriculturalist who's paying the vast majority of these fees, let's just be clear, right, is going to say, hey, this is too much. We need to talk about doing something different than just replacing all these wells because it's too much money. Because you're talking about millions and millions of dollars, right? And so ultimately, there is a backdrop to that in the sense that there's another program that says we can't take this too far. Does that make some sense?
Yeah. I have a lot to say about that.
My own wells are drastic action. It's just to be some
madness. That's what we're saying, though. That's exactly what we're saying. So we're not gonna mitigate overdraft. We're not gonna affect demand. We're going to mitigate overdraft by buying new wells for new.
No, we are going to affect demand. We are building pieces of a program right now to create the incentivized program.
2030.
No. Okay. That's today. 2030 is that actions. The incentivized stuff to reduce use based on us doing activities that help agriculturalists reduce use, that happens the day this thing gets passed. We're going to start doing that. We're going to initiate those fees, and we are going to start doing that. That happens now. So that is not delayed. That half of the program, because that's the point. You guys all sat in this room and said, hey, we want to make sure that we give ourselves enough time to see if the other way works, right? So let's give ourselves time to make sure the other way works. And we are doing it. And those are demand reduction incentives. Things like in lieu, right? So using surface water in lieu of groundwater. These are things like efficiency upgrades to existing agricultural and review of watering practices or uses. Right. This is finding the surface water sources that can be used in lieu. Right. All of these activities that are demand reductive only, not projects for recharge. That's a different program side that will also be running parallel to it.
Are you going to specify in the draft that we're going to see your fee structure penalties that would be implemented in 26? Specific with numbers, or is it just an outline of a framework?
This does not have dollars in it. Dollars are running parallel as well. I'm already started that work, and you guys have seen the first few minutes from last meeting. Were you there at the last meeting?
Yeah, but that's my concern is the numbers when they get implemented, what would you call not a feasibility study, but a cost benefit study to figure out what those numbers are. To me, those are pulled out of the air.
They're not currently pulled out of the air. They're used on real data that has already had projects completed in their cost. They are based on that.
We'll talk about two different things. I'll talk about actual punitive damage charges and how much they're going to be. Is that going to be in this demand management plan?
That is the pricing. That will be determined during the setting of the fees and rates.
So you might want to clarify, like the fees, it's
you're talking. No. He's talking about these steps 1 through 4 and the increased costs associated with that work. So those are the costs for that. Those are set within the rate study for fees because they're associated with the cost of providing a service. Does that make sense?
So I think what folks are trying to figure out is like the timeline of when are fees going to show up on their
2027.
And when are we going to see the outline of that? Is that
gonna That's be- happening during this.
But is it part of this demand management plan that we're going to review?
It is not part of the demand management plan. It's part of the fees and the fee study setting, and which will happen through the groundwater commission.
Yet to come.
The very beginning of it has just happened. I did the first couple of presentations about what could it look like, where we are.
That makes sense.
There's still work to do in that realm. Right. So we have very early discussions about that, but we're still doing.
So the well mitigation program, there's nothing that's really happened there, correct?
No, it's buildable.
Totally buildable.
I mean, we're at the same level as this where there's a complete straw proposal in place.
So you were talking about replacing wells, tanking during drought has been used all over. Because the well isn't necessarily failed during a normal year that you get a couple of years of drought. Is that in play?
Only in the sense that it says that it must be in an area with overdraft. So if there's no overdraft and your well goes dry, there's another issue. Mm-hmm. Right?
Again, in your average. Yeah, the question is tanking part of it? Or a drought situation. Let's say your well did go dry and normally you're fine. I mean, this happened all over down in our area.
Mm-hmm.
And those wells, many of them, most of them have recovered. Glenn County, they were tanking a year before Tama County. Most of, or I won't say most, but many of them recovered.
Yeah.
So the tanking was a short term. Less expensive approach than replacing well.
I understand what you're saying. So what we're talking about is the difference between a drought caused and an overdrought caused well drying. And they are defined in the sense that it must be due to overdraft. It states that in there. Now, that's a fine line to say. Yeah,
very
fine. Okay, let's we should talk about this at a different time, but since we're all basically on the same page and I'm bringing this thing forward, we can talk about this for a second. Are you good with that? You guys are good with that? And I'm getting consensus that this methodology with the timeframes associated with 2030 and 31 are what I'm bringing forward to the next steps to the commission.
I think I'm back to some of the restrictive measures that we have not discussed.
Let's talk about that's more important in this room. Okay. That well mitigation. Well mitigation is happening separately.
Well, I'm trying to put it in perspective because, replacing a bunch of wells is very expensive.
It is.
But there's also a interim measure that can be taken
for that's in the plan
situation.
That is in the plan too. What do you do to mitigate if you need to mitigate short term? That exists in the plan.
All right.
Okay. And hopefully that helps. But I tank engines instead of water concrete. All right. So what is it that you wanted to talk about?
Was it talked about what I've brought up in what three meetings now? Emails that I've sent.
Yeah, we're talking about.
Well, one of them was the contiguous, not contiguous polygons.
You're talking about the thing that says all properties that are together adjacent to each other within one basin are managed, can trade water back and forth for their own use within those contiguous parcels. Is that the piece that you're talking about? That's one of your primary discussions.
Well, part of it.
Yeah.
Right. You have the restriction on here under sustainable yield pumping, all groundwater extractors will be limited to the calculated sustainable yield, total acre feet per acre of all acreage within contiguous assessor parcel numbers under one ownership serviced by one or more extraction facilities. So, as long as you're in the same sustainable yield area, why do they need to be contiguous? Number one. Number two, so that it's kind of a that's kind of a separate deal. What about leases?
Yeah, so
leases is very common.
Two things. I thought we agreed that we are going to create a water trading program that would address those issues, such as non-contiguous parcels using water from one clip location to another. And the reason why I say that has to be different is, right now, there are, how would I describe this? Severe management issues with what you're talking about. And the reason why that is because properties are under ownership names all over the damn place. People are saying they own this, they could own this, they may not own this. Confirming whether or not it's under the same ownership is going to take years and years and years. And so right now, we can say this well on these contiguous parcels, because that's the law, is watering these acreages, right? And we can combine those together in contiguous parcels, watered by a well, and monitor and do the work of demand management associated with that extraction facility. If you start getting frisky and we say, hey, we're going to decide this guy over here and this set of parcels right here and this parcel right here and this parcel right here are not under the same ownership, you will never be able to get there under this program. And so I thought we were delaying that action, which is creating some way to trade water, by just saying in here that we are going to do that. That was my understanding.
Yeah, I don't know that was my understanding.
That's why we're talking. That was my understanding. So,
and, I think that looking at what I know, at least about our area, it's very common to have ownership, true ownership, in other words, title to various parcels that are not contiguous.
Sure.
They're everywhere.
Yeah.
I
agree. That happens. Yeah.
Well, it's not just that it happens, it's quite common. And so, restricting where somebody who's farming this 40 acres and another 40 acres, quarter of a mile away, not able to, he's within the same sustainable yield area, and he's not able to adjust what he's doing based on that common control.
Yeah. Save one crop by putting the water over there, not put there and let it go.
And not only that, is it helps you make decisions like, hey, this ground is not as productive for me. This ground is more productive for me.
For all those reasons,
I 100% agree with you. We're not arguing against that. We're just saying we don't have necessarily the bandwidth or the data available right now to put that together, and it takes a bunch of time. And so we're just saying we're going to commit to putting that together.
Well, say that in here.
I can't remove the contiguous parcel thing, because that has to stay, no matter what. Because wells right now aren't parcel by parcel basis. They are contiguous parcel basis, because that is the law in Dama County. So it says any contiguous parcel can be watered by the well in your neighboring parcel. And so many properties are handled that way. One well, 15 parcels get watered by it. And so I can't remove that, because then that dilutes that legal.
You can modify the language so that what you're saying, what you just told me, is clear.
By putting in there that says there will be a water trading program that further defines how parcel to parcel transfers, et cetera, leases, non-contiguous parcels get handled. It's the place mark to make that happen.
Needs to be in writing.
I will put it in writing in there. I will put it in writing.
Very clear.
Yeah. It will absolutely happen.
You're saying the police mark is sufficient for you?
I'm saying what we just talked about, which you can call it a place marker if you want.
Yeah.
But that it's in here clear and binding.
Yeah, on what the goal, it gives you a picture of what actually is going to come out of it. I got you.
I think so.
I will write that up. It will be there. I committed to do that, and I agree with you that it's important. I'm not trying to brush that off.
I think there was some concern earlier on that permitting that activity, water transfer, over pumping here versus
that's right
there, might create some negative impacts on that local
and
localized area.
Really need to.
I can think of one of my wells that's surrounded by residential users.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid of over pumping on that, even though it'd be a useful well for me to run water on.
I understand.
More than just what it's doing right now, because it's a great well.
I should point out that was already an existing ordinance. Your cone of influence cannot extend beyond your property,
right.
And it's roundly not enforced.
Absolutely,
maybe that is
this was on the edge of property.
Let's talk about those things. I think that can all be part of that discussion, and I'm with you. And by the way, that is something we should all take into account when we're talking about.
Tell me about the lease issue. I haven't understood that.
I lease a piece of property right now that I don't have ownership of, but I do all the management decisions of when the pump comes on, how much it irrigates and all that, but I don't own it.
Yeah.
It's titled as held by someone else.
Extremely.
Yeah. And so, you know, I've got a couple of them.
I mean, how many people have owned leases? Nobody does.
So I don't know specifically, because we don't know if I'm into it yet, but is allocations and penalties based on ownership, or who's pushing the button off pump, or how does that work when I don't actually own that?
It's who pays the tax bill. It's the property
debt. Right now it's about the tax bill and ownership.
Yeah.
A trading program would define the ability to trade water outside of
that. That's no different than if your tenant is a bad actor.
You're still
breaking the law in a land use situation. You're responsible because you're the landowner, you're the property. So you have to bring your tenant under control. You kick them off property or whatever. But ultimately, if there's a fine, it's going to get assessed against the property tenant or the property. So, I mean, it's addressed that way, right?
I'm not as convinced.
I would guess you would want to, in going forward as a landlord, you would want to have something in your lease agreement that says that the property operator,
sure,
tenant, is responsible for
compliance,
and sure, compliance with local work.
But, so this is going to take effect in 5 years.
But
a lot of the leases are 20, 25 year leases.
So what about that interim? Whether it's there or not, and that renter leaser walks away, those penalties still come back to the owner.
Yeah, it's a property. Ultimately, it's a property owner's problem.
The owner's going to have to take care of it one way or the other. Hopefully, his person leasing it pays it. Yeah. If they don't, he has bam. Point blank period.
Yes, it can be taken care of.
I am in the lease. In my leases,
I don't care what's in the lease. If you break the lease and don't pay it, The owner's still going to have to pay it.
I'm not, just like you know, the other way through. If the lessee breaks the law, then that would create an issue by which you would be going after the lease, right? Because they're not allowed to break the law. And this will become law. Those things will become law. And so therefore, you have the authority to do something about it as a property owner. Because you're not allowed to break the law as a lessee.
I think it's something that you can consider, but I don't know that you
what else have you got?
One thing maybe Ian, I can work with you and Justin because I've got a placeholder, but the language isn't ready. But I want to make sure that the change that you're asking for is a placeholder in that management actions triggers document that speaks to a commitment of exploring this. I want to work with the language on that, but just think that's there.
I don't know if I'd use the term exploring.
Creating a water creating program. I put it in there. I think we all agree it needs to be addressed. And by the way, the creation of it doesn't mean it can be very small, very big. So the outcome's the outcome. But we are agreeing to create it.
So that conceptually means if I reduce my water use / demand on a parcel, it's not contiguous to another one, I can get credit for it.
Potentially,
if it's inside the same polygon or the same
or the same area or the same whatever that is, I think everybody wants something like that. Yeah.
Well, right. Otherwise, why are we defining these management? I'm going to use the term management areas.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think we can come up with it. It just takes time, and we need to work on it. So we'll just say we're going to do it.
Reduction of demand is reduction.
I think, like I said, you also need to review and somehow get the cone of influence issue enforceable, not just by the boss.
I know it's a big deal.
Do it.
By the way, the district unfortunately doesn't have that authority, so whatever that is, but I can most definitely make the recommendation to the.
I mean, there's an ordinance, so take it off the books if you're there if you can't do it.
Or supervisors,
maybe.
Yeah.
Also, adopt an ordinance creating $500 per acre foot fine for all groundwater. Blah blah blah. As I pointed out, that the state. Water regulations, it's up to. So it's up to the flood control and water conservation district, not automatically $500. It's whatever they
say. That is correct. The maximum fine is $500.
That's not what it says there.
That's not.
It just says that it will put in place the $500. So that's the floor. We all talked about having a floor. The floor is if you have this terrible condition where you remain underneath the MT. We need to do something that immediately restricts demand so that we do not continue to pump below the FD. And so
You're saying up to 500.
I'm saying it needs to reflect what reality is, and that needs to be set by our elected officials, which is board of supervisors / the director.
So you want me to, does everybody want me to use the word up to $500?
I think that's it's better than what it says right now.
They can send it. I don't really care. I only put that in there because we said it's a floor and we want it to be restrictive. And so when I hear it's a floor and we want it to be restrictive, I say the worst case scenario, right?
To take care of that, I think. It's not specifying the dollar amount, which I think is part of your point. My point's the same.
Yeah, up to is fine with me. They'll vote on whatever they vote on. And that's okay.
Yeah, they're going to shut it.
Yeah. You guys want that consensus on that language in there?
Yes.
Okay.
And then just generally, and it's probably already out the gate on this, but one of the first points is why aren't you managing to MTs instead of MOs? Okay, you can do the same thing as far as the way it's laid out. Looking at MT and how
the state told us you can't manage MT.
I'm sorry.
The state told us you cannot manage the MTs anymore. Directly written in our responses to our GSPs, also written in the letter. I just got couldn't read that. They say you cannot manage the MTs, you must manage
the
MOs.
I think the kind of the perspective is you can't manage to fail.
It's not managing to
fail, it's managing to avoid failure.
Yeah, he's talking about saying that you let the MT be the trigger. I'm assuming he means it might be 10 feet above the MT, but the MT is actually something that was thought through on where it was set, and the MO was just, oh, hey, we were explaining it's just a goal. Just
I mean, put a number on there. There's that element. But in addition, I think irrigators and people in general understand why you don't want to get to the MT or below the MT, as opposed to the MO is kind of this amorphous thing. And I think there'll be less, I don't know if pushback's the right word, but I think it's a better approach.
You don't manage for failure, manage the MTs. That is, if you're using the MT as your target. No, we're not making the case use that as your target. It's MT plus a buffer.
I'm just going to say this out loud one more time. I guarantee you that Department of Water Resources will kind of back on that.
Would you mind sending me that?
But yes, I will.
How about for the sake of time, we'll add it as an alternative and it could be discussed. Like
at the next levels. Yeah. We can discuss that with the commission in for. I understand.
If no one saying, MOs, then it means it's got to even be a broader framework because we don't have MOs.
We already made it really broad because we don't have the MOs. That's the purpose. That's why we made it broad, because we don't have the MOs.
Can we establish the MOs under the work plan?
Under this?
Under the work plan now. The work plan is going to develop in 2026. And we establish those MOs.
Start on that. I don't know. That's not up to me. That has to be voted on still. Whether or not even expend those and create that program doesn't exist yet, so we all know.
You got to look at the historical data, how long data it has on an individual basis. Just my guess, you can on some, but I'm guessing there's some that's going to be a challenge. I don't think it's a perfect answer for you.
We are at time, and definitely the goal was not to resolve all the things that we discussed. It very much demonstrates why we still need to be discussing them. So the next steps for this is that we'll circulate that high level issues or document that CEI developed in the works that way you can provide your feedback. We submitted to these changes that will go into the management actions trigger document, either changes or notations to get some clarity. And two major
actions. And thank you very much for very productive and moving forward discussion this time. It was needed, so I very much appreciate it. Very much appreciate it.
The next meeting is September 24th, I believe.
So I remember, it sounds like we got to item D under section 3. We have not, where we did at? Not make it to E and F. Credits for recharge, conservation, efficiencies, and boundary spanning edges with Michael's.
Right, because certainly
we talked about that in September. But by the way, they're innate in the other programs, just so you know. So those benefits to any AI proposal list are innate in the other programs. For example, the recharge program or the efficiency based programs incentives. But yes.
Right. So for the sake of time and for the folks, we're going to close today this meeting out. But again, the next meeting is September 24th. So thank you very much.